an extremely active Atlantic hurricane season forecast, all eyes are quickly shifting to tropical weather. As you're tracking the tropics this season, Hurricane Track can take you along for the ride on storm chases, expert discussion and analysis, as well as live video feeds of what's happening from hurricane impact zones. Hey everyone, this is Hurricane Hal, host of the GeoTrek podcast. We have a special guest on this episode of the podcast, my friend Mark Suddeth, who runs Hurricane Track. Mark has been pounding the pavement for more than two decades in hurricane zones, collecting some of the best hurricane videography you'll ever see, which enables him to tell detailed stories of what happened during landfalling hurricanes. On this podcast, Mark tells us the story behind his amazing work, shares insights on hurricane impacts, and invites us to come along for the ride, at least virtually, during the fast approaching hurricane season. If you're new to the podcast, GeoTrek explores the world to tell stories about extreme weather and natural disasters not covered by the mainstream media. We focus on stories about the physical processes that generate these events, their impacts on society, and what we can do to get out ahead of them to reduce the loss of life and property. A little housekeeping note on this episode, I had some issues with my microphone, so the audio on my voice is a little muffled at times during the interview. Mark's voice sounds great, though, and that's the most important thing because he's a superstar of GeoTrek Podcast number 95, Hurricane Videography and Storytelling with Mark Suddeth and Hurricane Track. Mark, thank you so much for taking time to come on the GeoTrek Podcast.
Oh, great to be here. Heard about it. Now I'm on it. So thank you.
Mark, I've so wanted to bring you on. You are like the guru of hurricane videography. I mean, how did you get involved in this, getting out there, getting all this amazing footage of hurricanes?
I think it's because of where I grew up, Eastern North Carolina, four distinct seasons, heard about the hurricanes as a kid, the legendary hurricanes of the 50s, and then, of course, Camille, which was a Gulf Coast hurricane, but it was a big legend as well. And just all of the lore around hurricanes, you know, we have the graveyard of the Atlantic. There just seemed to be something very important about these events in American history. And I thought, I've got to study them and document them one way or the other. And that's what I set out to do, basically created my job out of thin air, you know, professional hurricane tracker. You can go to work for the government. You can go to work for a network TV station or even a big market local station as their hurricane expert. But I wanted to do something in the field, do education work, do documentaries, and just kind of combine that all into one. And with the advent of social media, especially YouTube, I can do all of that, share my findings in the form of documentaries, and show the world the power of tropical cyclones.
Mark, take us on some of your earliest chases. So what were these storms? What year was it? And were you out there with like a big video camera? Were you setting up remote cameras? What did it look like when you first started this work?
Well, the very first chase, so to speak, or intercept, they were coming to me, and that would be 1996. We had Hurricanes Bertha and Fran, and they made landfall real close to the Cape Fear region, and I had an old Sony Hi8 camcorder, very shaky, no tripod, terrible-looking stuff, you know, like if you compare to what we have now where everything's stabilized and it's beautiful 16:9, 4K, whatever. And I just did the best I could at filming stuff and just trying to tell a story. But those hurricanes came to me. Same thing in 1998 with Hurricane Bonnie. And then it happened again in 1999, Hurricanes Dennis and Floyd. We had five in the Cape Fear area or Eastern North Carolina within that short amount of time, 96 through 99. And it really wasn't until 2001 that I went somewhere for one of these events. And that was Hurricane Gordon in Cedar Key, Florida. And by then, I thought, hey, I should put a Sony camera inside of like a scuba housing and protect everything. You know, I saw scuba divers obviously taking great video beneath the ocean. What if we do that? So I bought one off of, I don't even know where. Did we have eBay in 2000? I don't remember. But I got my hands on an old housing that would normally be plugged into an expensive camera. But I didn't need all of that. I just needed to hit record, shove the camera in there, lock it down, and then just film. And that's what I did during Hurricane Gordon in 2000. And everything was born from there.
Well, I mean, it's usually one of the big hits of the National Tropical Weather Conference. When you give your presentations, usually a lot of it's just video footage and feeds from the previous year or recent years, right, where
I mean, looking at you're telling about early stories where the footage maybe wasn't as good. Now it looks so professional. And I know you're getting out there, you're putting up remote cameras. The work has come a long way since those early days, huh?
Yeah, so really the pivotal moment was 2004. We knew that we were trying to get towards some way of doing more remote cam work, using an old vehicle of ours, an old Isuzu Rodeo, as kind of a mounting platform to put cameras on the outside in additional scuba housings. And it was Charlie, Hurricane Charlie. We were sitting in our Chevy Tahoe, the crew and I, Jesse, Eddie, and myself, and that Category 4 hurricane scared us, certainly scared me. I'm not afraid to admit it. It was like being in an out-of-control commercial airline flight for 35 or 40 minutes where you think something very bad is going to happen. That's not a good feeling. And it was like, all right, we got to do this remote camera thing ASAP. And by the time we got to Ivan that year, that's exactly what we did. We put the old Isuzu in the beachfront area of Gulf Shores, Alabama. We had multiple cameras on there running. Now, these were just recording. They weren't live yet. And we got some extraordinary video from outside the Isuzu, looking around the pavilion area of Gulf Shores. And then we had a camera even inside the Isuzu watching what happens. But, you know, it got dark, so we didn't capture anything after dark, obviously. And then we told a story about how we did all of that. And I made it into a documentary called Tracking the Hurricanes 2004. And by 2005, we were able to do it live. And that took everything to, obviously, a whole new level.
Mark, when you mentioned the Isuzu, so these were cameras really mounted in a parked vehicle near the coast to just kind of record.
That's
right. Were you focused more on the wind or the water? Or, you know, when you think back to those like Hurricane Ivan, for example, were you just trying to capture whatever you could?
In the case of Ivan and pretty much all of these events, I knew that storm surge was what I was most interested in because it's the number one killer historically and the potential for the biggest killer in any given year. And it's very destructive, and very few people have good point-blank footage, especially from beginning to end. A lot of hurricane chasers over the years have captured some extraordinary stuff, no doubt. But I wanted sort of these fixed camera, sort of like a surveillance camera or a wildlife camera for wild hurricanes, mainly focusing on storm surge. And so that's exactly what we did. We took this old Isuzu, mounted the cameras on different spots up on the roof, one inside looking right down like you're sitting in the back seat of the Isuzu. And hey, we're just going to leave it here and let the hurricane roll in. The tapes ran for about 9 hours on what we called extended EP or something like that. So it was like pretty bad quality compared to what we have now. But Hal, it worked. We have some great video of that surge rolling into Gulf Shores, Alabama. And it really helped to prepare us for doing it live in 2005. And the first time we did that was none other than Katrina.
Well, Mark, we got to hear this story. And by the way, before we get to the Katrina story, I love that you're out there filming surge. A lot of people think of hurricanes as wind events, right? Because it's a lot easier to capture a palm tree blowing around in the wind than to film a life-threatening storm surge, right? So I love that you're out there filming the surge. How did it feel different than going live in 2005 with Katrina?
Well, we figured out how to go live using the old Sprint network and a laptop and Windows Media Encoder, a lot of complexities with it. A couple of friends of mine had told me how to do this, and it was tough. It was hard to figure out, but we figured it out. We cracked the code, and we were using these bullet cameras, analog, and we had a digital converter that would change it into a digital signal, of course, to run it into Windows Media Encoder. Then we had to go into a VCR. It was complicated. So we had this big box, huge battery, laptop, VCR, all these cables, a power inverter, a digitizer. I mean, Hal, it was like a Radio Shack inside of a box, but it worked. We set it out for Katrina in South Florida first, got some decent video down there. And then, of course, there was the Gulf Coast event. We were in Mississippi. Mike Watkins, my colleague that I was working with back then, he and I tackled it in the Gulfport area. We lost all three cameras in the surge, the camera boxes, found one, but there was an actual sort of a user error that I had screwed something up and we recorded blue screen for 9 hours. It was such a horrible defeat. And it would be 13 years until I could finally redeem myself. And that was Hurricane Michael in Mexico Beach. But in between, lots of growing, lots of changes with these cameras. Everything got smaller. The battery packs got smaller. The network got better. We switched over to Verizon to stream these things live. We started using GoPros to back up the terrestrial signal. And, you know, we got to 720, we got to 1080, we got to 4K eventually. And then in 2018, we nailed it. What is arguably the single best fixed camera shot of an entire hurricane event on video. That was Hurricane Michael in Mexico Beach.
That you showed that at the National Tropical Weather Conference, and just to see this incrementally go from just winds to all of a sudden here comes a surge to right. All of a sudden they're in a whiteout, and you could tell these are Cat 4, Cat 5 winds, and your camera recorded the whole story, right?
It did. It recorded the whole story, but you know, behind that is the story of how we did it, and that's what I really like to do. We record all kinds of stuff when we're in the field. Either me just talking to the iPhone and sort of a look live situation, or vlogging, as people call it these days. You know, we don't have a camera crew that follows us. We kind of do it ourselves. And then I try to stitch everything together, take people on this journey into that hurricane, where we're going to set up the cameras. And now I can edit everything together. I can use After Effects to create motion graphics and cool maps to kind of plot our routes, make it look like a documentary you might see on Discovery Channel or Fox Weather or something, you know, a network. I have no training. You know, you just learn this yourself. I do the music for it myself. I was a music major to start. Whole other story for another day. Got into geography and weather because they weren't teaching me. The short of it is they weren't teaching me to be the next Phil Collins or Steve Perry at UNC Wilmington. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go into geography and weather. And that's exactly what I did.
Mark, when you're out there, are you thinking of a particular audience? Are you thinking of like news media or your online followers? I know you've had a lot of different people interested in your videos. Who are you thinking about as you're putting together this footage?
That is a great question. Nobody's ever asked it like that before. And I tell you, in the back of my head, I'll tell you exactly who I'm thinking about. My audience is honestly the storm surge unit at the National Hurricane Center. That's what I'm thinking of. How can this benefit the science? How can we take this shot, show those impacts, show where the surge came in, how fast it came in? How can it have utility beyond the eye candy that does serve a purpose in our curiosity being satisfied on television? You know, we work with Fox Weather now, or the internet on our YouTube or our Twitter or whatever. But the core of it, the most important part of our mission, is to satisfy a scientific requirement of let's get a visual to verify that forecast. And if it's a catastrophic event, we have to be ready for it just like we would a sort of life-threatening storm surge, 4, 5, 6 feet, and anything in between. We want to make sure we're ready for it because I want the National Hurricane Center to be able to see that their products and services are in fact working.
Well, Mark, that's great. And if you're documenting the science so well, right, you're scientifically sound, you're documenting where you set this up, what the elevations are and what you're shooting, and that's useful for science. It's going to be useful to a very broad audience as well. Like you said, storm surge is eye candy. It's very destructive waves and water. People are going to be fixated to want to watch it. But that's great that you're really thinking about making this scientifically useful as well.
Yeah, so we look at the forecasts, we're reading those discussions, looking at the hazards affecting land, focusing on that storm surge information, oftentimes even communicating either through text or email, unofficially. You know, we don't work for the National Hurricane Center. We have no official affiliation, but we collaborate and we offer each other advice, you know, because I'm in the field and I think, you know, I think this marina could get hit pretty hard. And then, oh yeah, let's get a camera there if you can, but you know, there's nothing, you know how it is. If you want to work with NOAA, whatever, you're probably going to go through an act of Congress to make that happen, even if it's, quote, free. And I'm not asking for any money, and we don't. And everything we do is crowdfunded on the front end. But that relationship that I've developed over years and years of going to the National Hurricane Conference, the National Tropical Weather Conference, meeting with these people, going to the Hurricane Center, doing these seminars with them, and understanding the storm surge problem for the United States, that's what helps me do what I have done with my crew. I'm just the face of it. I've got a great crew and a great bunch of people behind me that have helped to make this a reality over the last 3 decades. And the biggest advances have been in the last 10 years.
Mark, if there is a hurricane making landfall in a relatively rural area or a remote area of coastline where they expect the strongest winds, highest surge, it's going to be remote, but 50 miles away, there's a more populated area. The winds are not going to be as strong, not as much storm surge, but maybe more impact. How do you make decisions out there? Are you mostly looking for the highest magnitude water and wind, regardless of where it hits? Or will you often put some cameras up as well where you're seeing maybe more impacts in a populated area?
Another great question. And the easy answer to that is we have so much equipment now that we can literally do it all. And so we can make sure we have cameras all throughout the entire storm surge warning area if need be. And sometimes cameras just a couple miles apart. In the case of Hurricane Ida, we had three cameras all down in the same general area of Frenier Landing near LaPlace, looking in different directions. And that was very, very important to the key of the successful documentation of that 9 or 10 foot surge that came in. I mean, imagine the Lake Pontchartrain coming up 10 feet. That's a big deal. And we had to be able to figure all of that out. And, you know, that's not New Orleans. That's not downtown LaPlace. It's this little area called Frenier Landing, but we landed it, you know, to use a pun there, and we captured that surge like nobody has ever seen before off the lake and lived to tell about it. So you bet we're going to try to spread out across the area as best we can, and it's kind of like casting a wide net. The wider that net is and the more points on that net, you know, the smaller the holes, I guess you would say, the more fish we're going to catch, to use that analogy.
Mark, I remember seeing some of your footage from Ida, and I believe one of the cameras got swept out into the water but was still recording live. And if I remember this correctly, I believe on the Weather Channel or other networks, they were saying this is what it looks like if you get swept into the surge. Yeah. It was a horrific video, but it was still recording it. I believe that was Ida, correct?
That is exactly right. We had that box strapped with ratchet straps like you would see, similar to something keeping cargo on a truck secure, not quite as wide, but still, these are not cheap ratchet straps. These are pretty heavy duty straps. And the surge, the waves had just kind of come up underneath the camera just right, that it popped it out of those straps. We didn't have a chain on it. You know, who's going to go down there and steal cameras from where there's going to be 10 feet of surge later? So we didn't really worry about chaining these up. So the surge took it, and you bet it kind of floated away looking up. And the view looked like basically the Blair Witch Project live during a hurricane. It was haunting. You could hear the water coming over the microphone of the camera. We use Nest cameras, by the way. And, you know, they're just home security cameras we have inside of a Pelican case with a battery and a Wi-Fi hotspot from Verizon. And it worked. It was a miracle. And we were able to watch it as it went along and get into the moss and the trees, and some of them look like monsters or hands coming down. And you're exactly right. The Weather Channel was talking about that look, this is kind of reminds of me of the, this is your brain and this is your brain on drugs. And they had the egg thing. What was that? The 80s. Well, this is, you know, you drowning in a hurricane if you don't evacuate. Very poignant, very in your face, quite literally. But that's exactly what people would have seen in Galveston, right? As they got swept away, as horrific as that sounds, that was the view from that camera, and we hope that it helps to motivate people in the future to evacuate.
Well, they say a picture's worth 1,000 words. What's a live video worth? You know, you're actually seeing in real time what this looks like. It's remarkable. Mark, have there been things that you've seen on your cameras that even astonish you, that you're like, I didn't even know that could happen? I mean, because you have so much footage from so many different storms. What are some things you've seen that you're like, okay, even for me, that just astonishes me?
I think Michael was the one that astonished me the most, watching the ferocity of these waves coming in to Mexico Beach, the power, and just kind of how long they were. Because just a few weeks earlier, we had Hurricane Florence, a Category 1 in southeast North Carolina. We had a camera or two set up in Surf City and along Onslow, Onslow Bay up there. And, you know, Category 1, the waves come in, they roll over the dune gets eroded, and they just kind of roll through. They're destructive, but it's a slower process. You see these waves come in and they roll through, they spread out, and that's that. In Michael, they would come in and then it looked like something was just jet propulsing them, and that something was the eyewall of a Category 5 hurricane. To see the kind of velocity where it's peeling up asphalt in front of your eyes. Imagine if we saw that in an EF5 tornado, if there was high resolution enough video to actually watch roads get pulled up. Maybe there has been, from people like Reed Timmer or other chasers that have been out there, but to see it in a Category 5 hurricane, giant sections of Highway 98 just getting peeled up like an eggshell and flipped over and everything getting moved, houses going across the street, it's mind-boggling. You hear about it, you see the aftermath, but to see it as it happened in stunning HD video, that was shocking. You know, even though I've seen enough surges in my life, to watch that was truly just eye-opening, no doubt about it.
Well, Mark, typically we see the aftermath. We know something very terrible happened here, but like you said, mm-hmm. to see high-definition footage of how this actually happened and the force of the wind and the water, I mean, that's just remarkable. And I think in one of our recent conversations, you said now in recent years, we're really starting to see more storm surge footage than we have in all of history combined, right?
Yeah. Yeah, more people, more cameras, more iPhones, more chasers. The chasers part, news media chasers, you name it, that's fine. You know, I don't have a patent on it. The people that are filming it with one of these, that does bother me because that means they didn't evacuate. And you know, you're trying to get your TikTok viral video. I don't know. I hope not. But in Ian, we saw people filming from inside their structures, and they looked like they were inside of a fishbowl, looking out as water had come up. You know, it was all murky and whatever. We don't want to see that. You know, some of these other, you know, chasers like Max Olson documented amazing video from Fort Myers Beach with a camera system similar to what we use with our GoPros. And that's great. That's what we want. There's plenty of coastline, plenty of opportunities to learn and study from these events. But as long as the people are not doing it, you know, that should have been evacuated and the chasers can do it without putting themselves in harm's way. Yeah, absolutely. Go for it.
Well, Mark, I think this is such a powerful educational tool, right? For people, when people hear of flood water, they're often picturing water rising vertically, like a ponding. Mm. And this is what we see in a summer thunderstorm. But you're describing this incredibly ferocious force of nature that's coming through, just taking everything with it. Mark, I wanted to ask you as well. I mean, there have to be a lot of challenges you face technologically, just with setting up the relationships and the communication. And then we all know if you're going into a hurricane zone, sometimes the police are out there barricading and trying to restrict access. I mean, there are a lot of challenges you face to get into ground zero for these storms and put up a camera network. What for you are some of the biggest challenges you think from your perspective?
That's a good question. You know, the local authorities and what all they're doing and realizing they're under a tremendous amount of stress. But that is, again, why I attend these conferences and we network with people and we develop these relationships ahead of time. Plus, the reputation of what we've done over the last, especially 10 years, precedes us. A lot of times people already know who we are. We have a marked vehicle. We don't have the Tahoe anymore with all the stuff on it that looks like it's out of Ghostbusters or Twisters or whatever. We don't need it, you know, honestly, but we do need a decal that says Hurricane Research on it and inviting someone to say, what are you guys doing? We want people to ask because we can show them, hey, we got these boxes. I can even pull up off of Dropbox an example. Oh, wow, I've heard of you guys. Yeah, you know, maybe near the courthouse or let me call so-and-so and see what they think. It starts the ball rolling. Every once in a while, there will be that authoritative figure that'll say, nope, not in my town. Go the other way. And you just do it. You don't argue. And so be it. But that's rare. It honestly is.
And Mark, we talked about the benefits for education, for evacuation. Mm-hmm. Even I've heard of people in litigation that say, hey, you know, I've paid contractors now $80,000 to fix my house. And the wind insurance is arguing with the flood insurance. And this is going to court. And it might be years until it's resolved. Right. These poor people are just want to be made whole. They can turn to your group or another chasing group that actually has video footage sometimes and help them resolve these issues. Right.
That's right. And a great example of that is Michael. Mexico Beach, we had numerous instances of people being denied wind insurance payouts because the insurance companies were saying that everything was surge. But we see in the video early on, before the surge ever even got in there, where the camera was, the roof of Toucans, a popular restaurant down there, flies off. The wind comes roaring in. You can hear stuff breaking, and there's no surge yet. That was used in court only months after Michael, luckily not years, and I started worrying a little bit. I'm like, I hope that this doesn't start costing insurance companies billions of dollars or they're going to put a hitman out after me. Joking, of course, but hey, look, the video, at least from the, now you can't say the video doesn't lie because we're in the world of AI, but these surge cameras, they don't lie. And, you know, look, if it is surge, it is surge. But in the case of Michael, the wind was very destructive ahead of time. And we were able to show that. And it did help a number of homeowners to be made at least more whole than they would have ordinarily.
Sure. And, you know, the video is telling the truth of what was seen at that place at that time. And that was my response to if people are saying, hey, don't set these cameras up in our town. You're helping a lot of people out along the coast in so many different ways. Mark, you mentioned that that people sometimes are following your footage live. I mean, how can people find you if people say, who is this Mark Sudduth guy? What are they doing here with Hurricane Track? How can people find you? How can people watch your footage or subscribe to your services?
So HurricaneTrack.com, been around since 1999. And that's the brand, Hurricane Track, all one word, Hurricane T-R-A-C-K. You know, all the social media at Hurricane Track. And the main area that we do our live stuff is on YouTube. Great back-end crew. A lot of these chasers now have a production team, and we do the same. And it's actually global. It's amazing what people can do remotely through OBS and other amazing software packages to make us shine out in the field. And we try to take people on that journey live. You know, I will brag. I'll tell you, in 2005, and I haven't been proven wrong yet, we were the first group to ever do it live, wall to wall, from the moment I left the driveway in Wilmington, North Carolina, until Gulfport and back, and actually the Florida part too. You know, that was 05. We were talking almost 20 years ago, and it was live. And ever since then, we've tried to do the best we can with it and tell that story, bring people on us on that journey with us. And it's, you know, the main outlet is YouTube. Of course, we work with Fox Weather proudly to have them showcase what we're doing, and they'll have some live coverage from us as well. But the wall-to-wall stuff, start to finish, go to our YouTube channel and just look Hurricane Track. We're right there.
Well, definitely check that out. I love what you're doing. And you know what I love about live is it's so engaging, right? Even if you're driving to a storm, whatever you're doing, that you can just keep that engagement going. And like you said, you're really telling that story and bringing people along for the ride. Mark, we're expecting an extremely active hurricane season this year. We know you'll be out in the worst of it. We're excited to follow your work this year and in the future. Appreciate you taking time to come on the podcast. And I know a lot of our listeners are going to be really excited to check out what you're doing there with Hurricane Track.
Great to be here. I appreciate it. Yes, we are looking at potentially a very impactful season. And we'll be on the road when necessary. And if you see us out there putting up one of these yellow boxes, that probably means that you should evacuate. So stop by, say hello, then pack up your stuff and hit the road.
Thanks, Mark. Wishing you a safe season. And I know it'll be an active season. We'll see you out there on the road.
Absolutely. You stay safe as well, Hal. Thank you.
Mark, thank you so much for taking time to come on the GeoTrack podcast. I've been wanting to feature you for a while, and this interview was definitely worth the wait. As I look back on this interview, three take-home points come to mind. First of all, I love that Mark's passion is to record video and verify hurricane events. As he shared, his main goal is to document the ferocious conditions of hurricanes, especially the storm surge, to provide scientifically sound footage that can be used for groups like the National Hurricane Center Storm Surge Unit to improve their forecasting and communication. Mark is really inclusive with his work and extremely engaged in the hurricane community. So while his perspective is that there's plenty of room for other storm chasers and videography teams in the field, he does mention he has concerns about people trying to record life-threatening hurricane hazards with handheld smartphones. And I think that's a really good mention that he has there. Also, our conversation did make me wonder, however, if we're going to see more hurricane footage in the future recorded from home security video footage or even Ring doorbells. Hurricane conditions can be quite localized, so the more cameras we have out there recording, the better. Secondly, I love that Mark shared very descriptively about the destructive nature of Category 5 Hurricane Michael, which devastated the Florida Panhandle in 2018. Mark shared that Michael's winds were actually peeling up parts of the asphalt road before the storm surge arrived, causing tremendous wind damage. Mark's description of these events will help our listeners discern that a Category 5 hurricane can inflict destruction from winds that are well beyond the potential from a Cat 1 or Cat 2 hurricane. Remember that the force of hurricane winds increases at a square of the velocity. So if you double the maximum sustained winds of a hurricane, you quadruple the force. So a Cat 5 hurricane with maximum sustained winds of 160 has four times as much force than a Cat 1 hurricane with maximum winds of 80 miles an hour. And that's just mind-boggling. If you've been in a Cat 1, you're like, wait, this is only one out of five. This is absolutely destructive. And yet a Cat 5 with 160 mile an hour winds has four times the force. Just absolutely mind-boggling. Finally, my third take-home point from this podcast is an encouragement about how the advancement of technology and the rise of social media enable us to be connected to innovators like Mark Suddeth. His work has drawn in a large audience of extreme weather and hurricane enthusiasts who get subscriptions to Hurricane Track so they can watch live footage of landfalling hurricanes. I hope you'll consider subscribing yourself so you can be part of this online community and get better engaged in what's happening in the tropics this season. Well, that's a wrap on GeoTrek podcast number 95. Special thanks to Mark for coming on the podcast, and a huge thank you to our loyal listeners who continue to engage with us and share our content with friends and family. Your support of the GeoTrek podcast has made us the number one podcast in the field of natural disasters. Let's keep an eye to the sky and to the tropics as we approach the kickoff of the 2024 Atlantic hurricane season. And I'll catch you on the next episode of the GeoTrek podcast.